Welcome back to the Deep Dive. This is your weekly exploration into the South African technology landscape, curated by the editors at Tech Central, you know, South Africa's leading business technology news website.
And powered by AI, which helps us dig into the source material you shared and really pull out the most important nuggets of knowledge and insight.
Okay, let's unpack this stack of articles from Tech Central. Our mission today, well, it's to make sense of some pretty significant shifts happening across the tech scene in South Africa right now.
Yeah, it looks like a real mix.
We're looking at everything from, you know, the ground war between mobile operators to space infrastructure messing with science, a huge potential change in broadcasting, and even AI taking over on the tennis court.
It's a diverse mix, definitely, but it tells a fascinating story, I think, about how technology, regulation, and, well, economics are playing out locally.
Let's dive in. So we're starting with the highly competitive world of South African mobile networks. We've got a few pieces here covering how much the big players are spending, Telkom's surprisingly rapid growth, and the rise of something called MVNOs.
Right. And what's striking about these articles together is they really show a market where the battle for subscribers is just intense. And, you know, companies are using very different strategies to compete.
Absolutely. The first article really highlights the sheer scale of investment happening. The big three, Vodacom, MTN, and Telkom, collectively spent a massive R27 billion on network infrastructure.
Just in the past year.
Yeah, just in the past year alone. That's their capital expenditure, or CapEx, just building and maintaining the physical networks.
And breaking that down, Vodacom led the way with R11.5 billion in South Africa for their financial year ending March 2025.
Okay.
MTN wasn't far behind at R9.8 billion for their calendar year 2024.
Right.
And Telkom was third with R5.8 billion, mm-hmm. also for their financial year ending March 2025.
Wow, R27 billion. That's a serious amount of money just being poured into keeping us connected.
Yeah.
Shamil Jusup from Vodacom mentioned they aim to keep their CapEx around, what, 13.5% to 14% of their revenue?
Yeah, that's the target range. And MTN's CEO in South Africa, Charles Malapisi, he gave some interesting context on that spending. He said about R3 billion a year recently, it was just on making their network resilient.
Against load shedding, you mean?
Exactly. I think batteries, generators at towers, that sort of thing. They've spent R95 billion over the last decade.
Incredible.
But get this, with load shedding improving, he plans to drop CapEx back to R6.5 billion this year.
So they can refocus that money.
Precisely. Money that was going into literally keeping the lights on at towers can now go back into improving the network itself. Both Vodacom and MTN highlighted that.
Right. Better energy supply, freeing up capital.
Yeah, to invest in things like expanding 5G coverage, boosting capacity for faster data, and upgrading their IT systems. Back to growth.
Now, here's where it gets really interesting, I think. Telkom, spending the least on CapEx among the three, is actually outpacing the others in subscriber growth. Another article shows Telkom Mobile added nearly 3 million customers in the year to March 2025.
3 million.
Reaching 23.2 million total subscribers.
That's phenomenal growth, especially for the third player in the market. And it helped drive their overall revenue up 8.3% to R24.4 billion and service revenue up 10.2% to R21 billion for the group.
So Telkom Group CEO Serame Taukobong called their mobile business the star. He said it's driven by that subscriber growth, even while maintaining their average revenue per user ARPU at R60 for prepaid.
Right. And prepaid customers are the bulk of their base, over 20 million. That prepaid ARPU did dip slightly from R65 to R60.
Okay.
But they attribute that to successfully adding customers in, you know, lower ARPU non-metro areas. So growth in new segments. Their total blended ARPU was R78.
So they're adding customers, even if those new customers maybe spend a little less individually on average.
Yeah.
But their mobile profitability jumped significantly too.
Oh, absolutely. Their mobile EBITDA, that's earnings before interest, tax, depreciation, and amortization, basically a key measure of operating profit.
Got it.
It surged over 30% to R6.5 billion. This expanded their EBITDA margin to a pretty healthy 26.7%.
So they're getting much more efficient.
Much more efficient at turning revenue into profit for mobile. Reduced load shedding costs definitely helped there. But, you know, smart management is clearly playing a role too.
And their data strategy seems to be really paying off.
Absolutely. Data subscribers grew almost 20%, making up nearly two-thirds of their mobile base now.
Wow.
Data revenue was up 12.3%, and data traffic just exploded up 24% year-on-year to 1,759 petabytes.
Petabytes. That sounds like a lot.
It's huge. A petabyte is like 1,000 terabytes. It's an astronomical amount of data. Shows you how much people are consuming. And they're putting R2.8 billion into expanding their 7,900-plus mobile sites to handle it.
Now, Telkom's consumer CEO, Lunga Siyo, made an interesting point about why they might be achieving this growth with, you know, less CapEx.
What was it?
He said Vodacom and MTN have the burden, the cost of managing older 2G and 3G networks alongside 4G and 5G.
The legacy stuff.
Exactly. While Telkom Mobile is primarily a simpler, mainly 4G network.
Makes sense. A simpler network probably means less complexity, potentially lower operating costs. Plus, they're strategically using that 800 megahertz spectrum they got in the 2022 auction, right?
Yes, exactly.
Lower frequency travels further, penetrates buildings better, so you can cover wider areas more efficiently, maybe with fewer towers than if you were relying solely on higher frequencies.
It makes sense. A leaner network using more efficient spectrum for coverage. Okay, let's add another layer to this mobile picture. The booming world of mobile virtual network operators, or MVNOs.
Oh, yes, the MVNOs. This is a fascinating trend. An article highlights that this boom is significantly increasing competition in the market, which is generally great news for you, the consumer.
So Johan Nil from BMIT, that research firm, points out there are now almost 30 MVNOs in South Africa.
Almost 30.
And they aren't building their own towers, right? They're basically buying wholesale capacity from the big networks.
Like Vodacom or MTN.
And reselling it under their own brand.
And they're targeting specific groups, which is clever. Mm-hmm. We're seeing bankled ones like Capitec Connect, Standard Bank Connect, FNB Connect.
Right.
And retail ones like Spar Mobile. They're the latest PNP Mobile, Boxer Concom, ShopRite Next Mobile.
So for Vodacom and MTN, these MVNOs are actually a way to reach customers they might not otherwise get through their main brand.
Exactly. Leveraging the MVNO's relationship with their customer base, whether it's bank clients or, you know, grocery shoppers. MTN SA CEO Charles Malpisi basically confirmed this is a key penetration strategy for them.
And the MVNOs can tailor their offerings more precisely, can't they?
They really can. Like Capitec Connect can optimize data plans based perhaps on what their banking data tells them their customers need.
Okay.
They have that deeper understanding of those specific customers.
This also increases competition between the big networks themselves, doesn't it? Because Vodacom and MTN are now competing to sign up the best MVNOs to use their wholesale infrastructure.
It definitely does. It gives the MVNOs more leverage, more negotiating power. BMIT predicts this growth will continue. They even suggest the combined MVNO market value here could eventually rival what we see in markets like Mexico, where it's a major force.
The article did mention a little caveat, though. It's not like every MVNO is guaranteed to succeed.
True. You need a significant customer base to achieve scale. They mentioned Stadio Mobile, the higher education one, leveraging its student base as an example of a new entrant needing that kind of foundation.
Makes sense.
But the expert consensus seems to be that this surge in innovative brands entering the market is a net positive overall. Even if some don't make it, it drives a healthier, more competitive mobile ecosystem for everyone.
So a really dynamic mobile market then.
Yeah.
Billions in investment, different growth strategies playing out, and this growing wave of targeted MVNOs. It's a lot to keep track of.
It really shows how companies are adapting to economic pressures and, you know, trying to find new ways to reach customers.
Now, let's move from mobile services to something maybe more fundamental for tech businesses.
Yeah.
The National Identity Database. And there's a controversial move involving it.
Ah, yes. This article. It reports on a planned and rather steep 150% hike in fees by the Department of Home Affairs.
For businesses wanting to access the identity database systems. Hainus and Abis.
That's right, for identity verification.
A 150% jump. That sounds huge. And I gather this is causing some pushback from the tech industry.
Oh, absolutely. The Association of Comms and Technology, ACT, which represents the major network operators like Vodacom and MTN.
Yeah.
They're challenging this. They argue there wasn't proper consultation.
Why is accessing this database so critical for these businesses anyway?
Well, because regulators require them to verify client identities. Banks need it to open accounts, insurers for policies, and crucially for the telcos for RICA compliance when you register a SIM card.
Right, it's mandatory.
It's a mandatory part of their operations. And a query that used to cost R4 would jump to R10 under this proposal.
Ouch, that adds up incredibly quickly when you're doing millions of these checks.
Exactly. ACT CEO Namvoiso Bhatti told Tech Central that Home Affairs seems to want to recover costs from system overhauls, you know, upgrading Hunnis to APIS.
Okay.
And they appear to view these identity database fees as the, well, easiest way to get that money back.
And ACT feels the process wasn't fair. They weren't consulted properly.
They argue Home Affairs didn't follow due diligence. Specifically, they didn't provide an economic impact study on what a 150% hike would actually do to businesses and the economy.
Right.
Bhatti says the Promotion of Administrative Justice Act requires this for a fair and rational process. You can't just slap on a massive increase without assessing the consequences.
What was the timeline on this? When did it happen?
It was quite quick. Home Affairs Minister Leon Schreiber first gazetted draft amendments in late March. Then an updated draft appeared just a week later, inviting public comment by the end of April.
And ACT also mentioned that Home Affairs brought up system abuse as a kind of justification.
Yes. Apparently, the department sees the hike partly as a way to deter abuse of the system, which can cause lag or downtime.
Okay.
But Bhatti countered that, well, if abuse is the issue, first you need to define what constitutes abuse, and then explore other solutions besides making it much more expensive for legitimate users. She also really criticized the sheer size of the increase, saying a gradual glide path is needed, not this sudden jump.
There's also a worry this could have unintended consequences for, like, fighting crime.
Potentially, yes. The concern is that if the cost becomes prohibitive, businesses might, maybe, reduce the number of statutory identity checks they perform.
Which could make it easier to
circumvent the RICA Act for SIM registration. And that makes it harder for law enforcement to track criminal activity using cell phone data.
Wow. That connection hadn't occurred to me. A database fee hike potentially impacting crime fighting down the line.
It really highlights how interconnected these things can be. Bhatti also noted the sort of lack of transparency around the pricing model itself, which has led to speculation that maybe these fees are intended to help fund broader digital reforms announced by the president, like implementing digital IDs.
Right.
Home Affairs did say back in March that their ABIS system overhaul had significantly reduced downtime below 1%. But the article noted they hadn't responded to Tech Central's questions about the fee hike specifically by the time they published.
So businesses are left grappling with a potentially massive cost increase, unclear justification, and these quite serious worries about regulatory compliance and even national security implications. It sounds like a pretty tense standoff.
It does, and it really underscores the importance of clear, transparent regulatory processes when government introduces significant changes that impact how businesses operate and, you know, comply with the law.
All right, let's shift gears completely now. From ground-level regulations to the vastness of space, because technology up there is creating some unexpected challenges for science down here in South Africa.
Yeah, this is a fascinating one. This story is about concerns over the impact of satellite mega-constellations like Starlink.
Right.
On radio astronomy in South Africa.
And South Africa plays a pretty big role in global astronomy, doesn't it?
A huge role, yeah. Our location in the Southern Hemisphere is crucial. It gives astronomers a unique view of the center of our own Milky Way galaxy, like directly overhead.
Okay.
And we're a key partner in projects like Very Long Baseline Interferometry, VLBI, which links telescopes worldwide to effectively create one giant telescope dish the size of the Earth.
Oh.
And of course, the big one. We're building the core of the Square Kilometer Array, the SKA, in the Karoo.
Which is supposed to be a radio quiet zone protected from interference.
Precisely. The Karoo is protected from ground-based radio interference to allow the SKA and other facilities there to listen to incredibly faint signals from the universe. But Adrian Tiplady from SARAL, the South African Radio Astronomy Observatory, he explained that existing regulations were never really designed to handle interference coming from satellites.
And why are satellites such a problem for radio astronomy? I mean, aren't space signals faint too?
They are, but radio astronomy detects radio waves that have traveled for billions of years. They are unbelievably faint by the time they reach us. Even low-level radio emissions from satellites, maybe unintentional leakage,
right,
can easily mimic these faint cosmic signals. It pollutes the data, could give astronomers false readings, and stronger signals from satellites can be even worse.
How so?
They can actually overwhelm or even physically damage the supersensitive receivers on the radio telescopes, effectively blinding the telescope in certain parts of the radio spectrum, making them unusable for science.
Okay, so they used to be able to manage this when there were just a few satellites up there.
Yeah, with older geostationary satellites, which are far away, or even earlier low Earth orbit LEO satellites, astronomers could often work around them, maybe slightly reposition the dish or schedule observations for when the satellite wasn't in view.
But the explosion of mega constellations changes everything.
Completely changes the game.
Right.
Mega constellations meaning thousands or even tens of thousands of satellites.
Tens of thousands?
Oh, yes. Starlink alone has over 7,600 satellites launched already. They have permission for up to 12,000 from the US FCC.
Okay.
And SpaceX has even applied to the ITU, that's the International Telecommunication Union, the global body governing radio spectrum, for permission for another 30,000 satellites.
Good grief.
Potentially reaching 47,000 Starlink satellites in maybe 5 years. And other companies like China's Qianfeng have plans for thousands more, too.
With that many satellites constantly moving in LEO, which is much closer to Earth than geostationary orbit, avoiding them operationally sounds, well, impossible.
It basically is. Tip Lady stressed the urgent need for real collaboration between the astronomy community and the satellite operators on mitigation measures.
Like what kind of measures? What can they do?
Well, some promising technologies include actively directing the satellite beams away from known observatory sites on the ground.
Yeah.
And also shifting the frequencies the satellites use away from the specific, very sensitive bands that radio astronomers rely on to listen to the universe.
Could South Africa introduce rules locally to require this kind of thing?
Tip Lady suggested that licensing agreements here for satellite operators could potentially include stipulations for things like satellite beam redirection. But fundamentally, regulating LEO satellites is largely an international matter.
Underbodies like the ITU, you mentioned.
Exactly. Which is why the 2027 World Radio Communication Conference is so important. That conference is specifically set to look at LEO satellite interference in detail. Tip Lady's key point for South Africa is that ICASA, our communications regulator, needs to be actively involved in those discussions.
To protect our assets.
Yes, and ensure that any licensing processes here for satellite service providers actually take into account and build upon the mitigation mechanisms that hopefully come out of those international ITU studies. South Africa's radio astronomy assets, like the SKA, are just too valuable scientifically and economically to risk being blinded by satellite signals.
So it's a classic case, really, of one technological advancement, satellite internet, creating complex challenges for another fundamental space science.
Yeah.
It's a tricky balancing act.
It really is. Requires international cooperation and, you know, smart local regulation. It's not about being anti-progress. It's about finding ways for different technologies and scientific pursuits to coexist.
Okay, let's move now to what feels like, well, the big story this week and the sources you shared. And it's about a potential game changer in South African broadcasting. MultiChoice and the future of Supersport.
Ah, yes. This one definitely caught my eye. This article reveals that MultiChoice is accelerating a crucial investigation into potentially unbundling Supersport from its main DSTV service.
Unbundling. So does that mean you wouldn't have to buy a big, expensive DSTV package just to get the sport channels you want?
That's exactly the idea they're exploring. MultiChoice Group CEO Calvo Mawela told Tech Central they're seriously looking at maybe allowing you, the consumer, to buy a DSTV general entertainment subscription separately without the bundled Supersport channels being mandatory.
That sounds like a completely different model for them, doesn't it?
It really is. It's a model used by some international pay TV operators. Instead of forcing customers to take that large, often expensive package that includes all sports, subscribers could potentially choose to add specific sports bouquets. Maybe you only want soccer or just rugby, or perhaps you could still opt for an all sports package, but it would be tailored to what you actually want to watch and pay for.
And why are they fast tracking this investigation now? What's the urgency?
Well, the bottom line is it's a direct response to significant subscriber losses. The article uses the word hemorrhaging pay TV subscribers across Africa, including right here in South Africa. They lost a substantial 1.2 million paying DSTV subscribers in the past financial year alone, ending March 2025.
1.2 million subscribers gone in just 1 year. That's huge. What's driving that loss?
Mawela blamed what he called unprecedented headwinds. He pointed to challenging economic factors, a generally weak consumer spending environment,
sure.
and also structural industry changes. Things like piracy, obviously, competition from international streaming giants like Netflix and YouTube Premium, and even social media just competing for people's time and attention.
He highlighted the consumer's financial pressure specifically, didn't he?
He really stressed that. While the other factors definitely play a role, he said the biggest driver wasn't necessarily a fundamental problem with their strategy itself, but simply that people are struggling financially.
Makes sense.
And his quote is very telling, I thought. He said, "People are stretched financially and they are making calls on whether to buy entertainment or food. And of course, food will always take precedent."
That really brings it home, doesn't it? In tough economic times, something like a premium pay TV subscription, it's a discretionary expense. It's often one of the first things to get cut.
Exactly. So this unbundling investigation is clearly an attempt to make DSTV more accessible, maybe more affordable, giving consumers more choice and potentially a lower entry point if they don't want or simply can't afford the full sports package anymore.
When could this actually happen? Is there a timeline?
The investigation is expected to conclude by March 2026. So still a little way off. But Moella was very clear on one critical point.
What's that?
Whatever the outcome of this investigation, whether they unbundle or not, the result must deliver revenue and profit growth for the group. It can't just stop the bleeding. It needs to be a viable business strategy moving forward.
Okay, so it has to make financial sense for them too. And if they do unbundle, could you potentially buy, say, a Super Sport package on a different streaming service or platform? Like, could Netflix buy the rights to show Super Sport?
Don't count on it. Moella made it absolutely clear that sport is their key differentiator. It's the crown jewel. It's what drives subscriber loyalty and attracts new ones.
Right. It's their main draw.
Exactly. So if they unbundle Super Sport within their own DSTV offering, they plan to keep that content exclusive to the multi-choice ecosystem. No sharing the prime asset.
Okay, that makes sense strategically. And to further address affordability, the article also mentioned them piloting weekly bundles. Is that right?
Yes, that's another angle they're exploring. They're currently piloting weekly DSTV bundles in Uganda.
Interesting.
If that proves successful, the plan is to roll it out to other markets, potentially including South Africa. It's another way they're trying to make the service more flexible and perhaps more palatable for consumers feeling the financial squeeze.
So this isn't just a small tweak. It's potentially a really fundamental shift in how MultiChoice packages and sells its most valuable content. And it's all driven by the tough economic reality faced by its customers. This really does feel like the main story shaping the broadcasting landscape right now.
It really is. It shows a major established player having to drastically rethink its entire model in the face of serious economic headwinds and, you know, fundamentally changing consumer habits and competition. Big stuff.
All right, let's wrap up this deep dive with something perhaps a little lighter, but still, well, a clear sign of technology's relentless march forward. AI on the tennis court.
Ah, yes. In a move that feels, I don't know, almost symbolic, human line judges will be completely absent from the hallowed grass courts of Wimbledon this year.
No more. Gone are the folks in the crisp shirts, standing perfectly still, ready with that dramatic arm gesture to call in or out. What replaces them?
Fully electronic line calling. It's going to be handled by 12 cameras per court and some pretty advanced AI technology developed by Sony's Hawkeye Innovations.
Hawkeye. That's the system they use for instant replays, isn't it? The ball tracking.
That's the one. It actually has a cool origin story founded by scientists who were originally researching rocket trajectories, believe it or not. Hmm. Sony bought them back in 2011. They use AI to pinpoint the ball's trajectory with incredible precision. And the system can apparently even detect foot faults during serves now, too.
So no more arguments with the line judge, just arguments with a camera system.
Well, maybe. The players can still challenge the system's calls, I believe, but Hawkeye is known for being incredibly accurate. And this technology isn't entirely new to the Grand Slams.
Right.
It's already used at the Australian Open and the US Open. Wimbledon has even used it before to assist the human judges, but this is the first time they're going fully automated for all the line calls.
So what's driving this move to full automation now?
Sony's sports entertainment business head, Fumiatsu Hirai, he cited several reasons. There's apparently pressure to shorten matches, keep spectators engaged with faster play.
Right, less stopping.
And also, interestingly, a shortage of human referees that's persisted since the pandemic.
Okay. But the human element wasn't always easy for the officials either, was it?
No, and here I brought up a more serious point, too. He mentioned the increasing ire that human referees face.
Yep.
Yeah, including receiving death threats, unfortunately. Fueled by online bullying and the prevalence of sports gambling nowadays, it's become quite nasty. As he put it, calls for automation are only growing stronger.
Wow. That puts a different spin on it. From a humorous take on replacing people to a stark reality about protecting them.
It really does. It shows technology is often stepping in not just for efficiency or accuracy, but sometimes to shield human officials from unacceptable levels of online abuse. For Sony, of course, this Wimbledon contract is a significant win as they push further into sports tech.
They're standing in this area.
Yeah, they've been acquiring other companies in this space too, like data analysis firm Beyond Sports and motion capture firm Kinetrax. And the article says they're actively looking for more acquisitions.
Well, the global sports market is enormous business, right?
Absolutely huge. Projected to reach over $650 billion by 2028. Sony's sports division is still relatively small within their overall business, but it's growing fast, actually exceeding their target annual growth rate.
So Hawkeye is seen as a leader in this sports tech field.
Seems so. An associate professor, Mitsuru Tanaka from Shobi University, sees them as a clear leader, pointing to Major League Baseball switching to their system as strong evidence.
But is their top spot guaranteed? Is there competition?
Tanaka also added a note of caution. He warned that the pace of innovation in sports tech is incredibly rapid, and the barriers to entry might be relatively low.
Meaning?
Meaning Hawkeye needs to stay ahead of the curve and keep innovating, or they risk losing their edge if a superior technology emerges from somewhere else. Constant pressure to improve.
Fascinating. So from the high-stakes world of billion-rand network builds and regulatory battles over database fees to the potential unbundling of sports entertainment driven by pure consumer economics, and now AI taking over one of the most iconic human jobs in sport, it's been quite a whirlwind of tech developments.
It really highlights just how interconnected and rapidly changing the tech landscape is, doesn't it? Not just globally, but specifically here in South Africa, impacting everything from how you connect to the internet to how you watch your favorite sport.
This really raises an important question for you listening in to consider. With all these technological shifts we've discussed today, you know, from AI referees calling the lines to potentially modular sports content and these constantly evolving mobile networks, how do you see technology personally impacting the way you consume information, entertainment, and services in the next year or so? Something to mull over.
Definitely. And if you want to stay informed on all of these developments and get deeper analysis on the South African tech scene, remember, you can get everything you need from Tech Central.
Just visit their website at techcentral.co.za.
And while you're there, be sure to subscribe to their excellent daily newsletter. It's at techcentral.co.za newsletter. You won't miss a beat.
That's all for this deep dive.
We'll catch you on the next one.